It gives me great pleasure to introduce the head table for the festivities for this evening. On your left, far left, my right, Second Vice President Lee Martin. From the NFB of Kentucky, State President Kathy Jackson. Yeah. Our very own legendary president, Ron Brown. Yeah. First Lady Jean Brown. Barb Dosh, Secretary. First Vice President Pamela Schnur. And husband Tony Schnur. And that's your head table for this year.
All right.
Hope this trophy ain't in your way, Carla. I got it up here. You need the space?
No, I've heard.
Good deal.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are now going to be graced with our keynote speaker for tonight. You have heard from her this weekend a lot. You're going to hear her banquet presentation tonight. Carla McQuillan has been president of the Oregon affiliate since 1992. She served on the national board for 10 years. She is the past bail coordinator nationally for the Bail Project. Help me to welcome and give her an Indiana rousing applause for Carla McQuillan.
Gotta move this microphone down. I love that little. Good evening. Roman Payne, the author of The Wanderess, said, wait, I think my notes are upside down. It's really hard to read Braille when it's upside down. That is not what he said. Wow. Would have thought I would have figured that out before I got up here. Sorry. Let me try one more time. Roman Payne, the author of The Wanderer, said, travel comes from the old French word travail or travailler, which means to work, to labor, a painful or suffering effort, an arduous journey, a tormenting experience. Now, I have had many tormenting travel experiences, but I'm not talking about the ones that are self-inflicted. You know, like, for example, I was at the Colorado Center for the Blind for the purpose of learning Braille when I was 32 years old, because I never learned as a child. And as part of my program, I was required to go on travel routes. Okay, I'm good with that. I got a lot of residual vision that I rely on a lot, but hey, all my blind colleagues do it, I can do it. So I'm out on a travel route with Eric Woods, some of you may know, and we're going to the coffee shop, which is a few blocks away from the Colorado Center for the Blind. Now, we go to the coffee shop, and I find the door, and I get in, and I order my coffee, and I got my big old cup of coffee, and it's a cold day. It's February in Colorado, which could mean almost anything. I mean, it could be 70 degrees, and it could be minus 20. And one day could be 20, and one could be 70. That's the way it is in Colorado. So I'm walking out, and I know what I'm doing and where I'm going, and I'm cruising at the speed of light in front of Eric Woods and Julie Deedon, who are walking behind me. And there's a sign along the sidewalk on the left as I'm walking. So my cane is in my right hand, my coffee is in my left hand, and I'm moving because that's what I do. I move at a clip. And I didn't catch the signpost with my cane, but my left elbow that was holding my coffee cup did. So as you might imagine, the coffee cup slammed against my chest, the lid popped off, and coffee flew all over me and my favorite white cotton sweater. And for those of you who know, coffee and cotton, oh yeah, and it was nasty. And I said some words that I probably would never have said around a civilized group of human beings. And Eric Woods behind me says, "What's up, boss?" And I said a few more choice words. And then I proceeded on, and we got back to the Colorado Center, and I asked for permission to take a few minutes. I took my sweater off. I washed it in the sink. So now I put on, I wring it out as much as I can, but it's cotton, all right? Work with me on this. So I put this soaking wet, but not any longer stained, cotton sweater back on. I walk out of the restroom. I'm coming through the center, and I go, you know what? I missed out on my coffee. So I got another cup of coffee from the kitchen. And I'm walking down the hallway, and one of my colleagues was at the vending machine, and I heard her cursing at it, because frequently the BE managers that ran those machines did not fill them with everything that the people at the center wanted. So she had a few choice words of her own, and I said, "Hey, Angela," and she spun around and hit my coffee cup, and it slammed back on my chest again. Okay, these are not the kind of travel experiences that I would blame on anyone else. It was all me. It's the encounters with others that are the ones that are the most memorable to me. And they are so frequent and so common that I have categorized them into three categories: planes, trains, and automobiles. Now, I travel a lot for the National Federation of the Blind, and I travel a lot for my business endeavors. I speak at a lot of Montessori conferences and do a lot of trainings around the country. So I fly a lot. And I have a very small airport, a regional airport, that I fly out of all the time. And I happened to be traveling at this one point in time with a group of my staff members to a Montessori conference. And it's one of those little jets, right? And I walk in, I'm the first one on the aircraft, and I walk in, and the flight attendant literally does a spread eagle and bars my entrance into the aircraft and says, "They're supposed to tell me when someone like you is coming on board." Now, my staff behind me is laughing, and I said, "Yeah, well, I just need to, when we get to San Francisco, you're going to have to walk downstairs." And I thought to myself, are you, and I wasn't quick enough to say it out loud, are you suggesting that I get off the plane now, or that you are going to carry me down when I get there? Or, I mean, what exactly is the message here? So I said, "You know, I'm in the front row, so if you just step aside, I can get in." So I sit down, and one of my staff members next to me and a couple of the others across the aisle, and she comes over and asks which of them are taking care of me. And, of course, my staff members all are laughing out loud because they've known me for years, and they're like, "Oh, no, you misunderstand. She is taking care of us," which of course, did not instill any confidence in the woman and my little crowd. But I'm happy to say I wasn't the only one that she mortally offended that particular flight. So that was one of my experiences. One of the others, I get on an aircraft, and I was paged up to the front desk because I was seated way back in the aircraft, and I had premier status, so they wanted to move me up. So they were changing my ticket, and when I walked up with my white cane, the guy at the counter goes, "Oh, you were way in the back of the plane, but the only good seat I have for you is in an exit row." And I said, "You know what? I'm okay with an exit row." And he goes, "Yeah, well..." FAA isn't okay with you in an exit row. And I said, okay, whatever. And he said, so do this. When you get into the airplane, would you please let a flight attendant know that if there's an alternative seat, if somebody can switch with you? And I said, okay. All right. So I'm being dutiful and compliant. And so I tell the sweet young flight attendant that I walk in and she's there. And I said, okay, the guy at the desk says, I have to tell you that I'm in an exit row. And if there's an alternative seat that I can sit in, then you should reseat me. And she said, well, are you okay with an exit row? And I said, yeah. Well, go sit down, she says. Okay. So I go sit down. And I'm in the window seat because that's my preferred seat. And there's an older couple sitting next to me. And my tormentor comes down the aisle. And she's older. And she says to me, you can't sit in this seat. And I said, why? And she said, safety. Now, I will tell you that I had the presence of mind, because I've thought about this before, to ask her, really? So do you prohibit alcoholic consumption from anybody who sits in the exit row? And the answer, of course, was a staggering no. And I said, well, if safety is really your priority, then that's not an issue. I said, you don't know who I am. I said, I run schools. I manage groups of children in the hundreds, and I have for years and years and years. If there's a problem with this aircraft, there's nobody better to be sitting at an exit row than me. And she stood there for a moment, and the couple next to me said, we're okay. We don't mind if she sits here. And she went away. Score up one for me. All right, now, my next category should be trains, but it doesn't work with the story. So we're going to go to automobiles and then to trains, all right? Play along. Really, you'll be happy you did. All right, so when I was at the Colorado Center, I am under sleep shades, right? And I get on a bus, and a guy next to me says, are you all right? I said, yeah, I'm fine. Why? What are those things on your face? And I said, well, you know, and I went through and I explained, I'm in training, blah, 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 and this is what I do, right? And he says, you're blind? I said, yes, I'm blind. And he says, well, you don't look like you're starving. Not really understanding what the connection between blindness and starving was, but okay. So I just let that one go. And one of my favorites, and this is what leads into the trains. This is why I had to play it this way. So I attended, which I do frequently. In fact, I will be next weekend attending the Washington State Convention of the National Federation of the Blind. And I had just come away from a fabulous weekend, uplifting with all my friends from Washington. I call a cab to get to the train station. I get out the front door of the hotel. The cab is there. And the guy says to me when I get in, wow, you did that real good. And I'm trying to figure out what exactly I did that was real good. But I said, what? And he goes, you just found that door. And I said, you know, I've been here all weekend. It's been in the same place since I got here on Friday. So, okay, whatever. So we get in, I tell him I'm going to the train station. And he says to me, have you ever thought about speech? That's exactly what I did. What? I sat there for a moment trying to discern what thought might be going through his little twisted brain at that moment. And I couldn't come up with a single thing. So I said, excuse me? And he said, you know, speech, like speech therapy. I would think you guys would be good at that. And I said, no. And I explained to him what I did, that I ran Montessori schools and I was a director and blah, 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 blah. And a few more moments go by. We can't get to the train station fast enough, apparently. And he says, do you know Joe Barber? And I'm thinking, should I? I said, no, I don't think so. Why? Well, he's a deaf guy. Because, of course, I ought to know the deaf guy. I said, yeah, no, I'm not familiar with that particular individual. And fortunately, we did arrive at the train station, and I thought my travel tormenting was over. Oh, I was so wrong. I was so incorrect. So you can imagine, I am wearing a suit. I get onto the train. They seat me next to a very chipper little woman. And I'm tired. It was banquet night the night before, and I hung out with my friends probably way later than I should have. And all I wanted to do on my way home was sleep. So I sit down, and she says to me, "Hi, are you visually impaired?" And I said, "Yes, yes, as a matter of fact, I am," and proceeded to explain to her how I had just been to this convention and blah, blah, blah. And she says, "Are you a student?" Now, there is not a thing about my appearance. Okay, I'm probably in my mid to late 30s. I am wearing a suit with heels, and I am dressed like a business human being. And why on earth she would think I was a student, I have absolutely no idea. And I said, no, I'm not a student, and told her about what I did for a living. And that kind of baffled her a little bit. She was quiet for only moments. And I closed my eyes to pretend at least that I was trying to sleep, hoping she would go away. And she says to me then, "Are you married?" And I said, "Yes." "Oh, good for you." And then she says, "Do you have children?" And I said, "Yes, I have two." And she says, "Oh, isn't that great?" And I thought at that moment, I had a 13-year-old daughter. Y'all have 13-year-olds? I've just been talking about my daughter. You want to talk about long on attitude? You're seeing nothing here in front of you. My daughter was attitude long when she was really young. Let me give you a story, because I know there are people in this room. I won't be able to tell this story very long. But when my daughter was 9 years old and she was at the Detroit National Convention in 1994, she's standing at an elevator bank. And there's crowds of people. You know how that is. Those elevators were horrible, by the way. And somebody would push the elevator button, and an elevator would come, and people would get in. And before the doors would close, because, of course, everybody can't get in. There's still people waiting. Somebody would push the button again. My daughter happened to be there at the time that Tony Cobb, Dr. Jernigan's son-in-law, was the one pushing the button before the elevator had taken off. So he pushes the button, the doors fly open, everybody groans inside, and then it tries to close again, and he pushes the button yet again, and the elevator doors open again. And Allison, 9-year-old Allison, said to Tony Cobb, "If you would just stop pushing that button until that elevator goes away, we might get another car our way." And I only know this because one of my dear friends stood there and observed it and was mortified that Allison had spoken to him that way, but she was calling it as it is. So when this woman says to me, when I say, "Yes, I have children," and she said, "Isn't that great?" I said, "Sometimes." We've all been there. I close my eyes again. She taps me on the shoulder and she says, "Excuse me. You are visually impaired, right?" Now, we've already established this. I know there's something else coming, so I don't even respond. I just turn and glare and wait for it. "It's just that you seem so normal." Now, there was a time in my life when that would have crushed my soul. When I would have curled up and wanted to disappear. But you know what? I am a member of the National Federation of the Blind. And I know those were just words from an ignorant human being. And I did not let them get to me. You know, I learned something. My husband is an instructor in speech communication at our local community college. And he does this really wonderful presentation that we've done for our members. I've done for my Montessori trainings. And it's about communication climate. It's about how you can change or make the climate of communication in your environment better or worse based on what you do. And he talks about disconfirming messages. He talks about a lot of things, but one of the ones I want to focus on, disconfirming messages. Okay? These are the things like that woman just said. But you seem so normal, right? Disconfirming. They attack who you are at your very core and soul. But, and I'm going to say this twice because I don't want you to ever forget it. A message is only disconfirming to the extent that the recipient perceives it to be. I'm going to say it one more time. A message is only disconfirming to the extent that the recipient perceives it to be. So if you don't mean enough to me, if you don't have enough of an effect on how my life will go or how I will live my life, you can't hurt me. Nothing you say will get to me or affect me. You need to adopt that, and you need to make it a part of your life every day. But if I had not been a member of the National Federation of the Blind, I would not have adopted that attitude. Now, the good news is that that woman got tired of me and started talking trashy novels to the woman across the aisle from her, which was just fine with me. So I got my nap, all right? In 2016, President Riccobono asked me if I would run for the National Board of Directors again. And I said, I'd love to, but why? And he said, I'm looking for forward-thinking people. Well, as I was writing this banquet speech for my first convention after I was elected in 2016, I realized about this point that all of these stories I just told you about travel are at least 15 years old. So I started to go, do I have any more recent, real, great horror stories? And you know, I don't. And I stopped and thought about it, and I went, okay, maybe things are getting better. Maybe we are changing what it means to be blind. But that was our old tagline, right? Changing what it means to be blind. Old tagline, exactly, because I think we have. Do we have a ways to go? Oh, absolutely. We have a long way to go, but I think we have changed a lot of perceptions. You know, I said this, I gave this banquet speech, I don't remember where I was, and somebody came up to me later and said, yeah, it could be that things are getting better, or it could be that people just don't care anymore. And I said, well, okay, I suppose that's a possibility. But why has it changed? I think a big reason is we have training centers. And the number of blind people who have gone through NFB training centers increases almost exponentially because of the way it's not just those who get trained. It's those who then go into their communities, out into the world, and help other people move forward in their travel skills. And I think it has made a significant difference in the perception that people have of us. You know, the other thing I observe is that people ask more if I need help than just grabbing and manhandling me. A few years ago, we took our Bell Academy kids to the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry. Every one of us was blind. 3 blind adults, 5 blind kids. Nobody messed with us until we got to one point and an older guy grabbed a hold of me. And I said, you need to stop. Just don't do that. You can talk to me, but do not touch me. That was the only time anybody messed with us. Nobody even asked if we needed help. That's unusual. I was on an airplane and flight attendant came up and said, do you need any help? I said, no. And she left me alone. She didn't mess with me the whole rest of the trip. And that is something that did not happen 20 years ago. That is different. That is new. So I say to you, we know this. We can sit here in this room and talk about how we can just ignore those disconfirming messages. But if we want to live the lives we want, we need to make sure that we also support those other blind people out there who are not part of the National Federation of the Blind, who do not know, who would have been crushed by the words from the woman that I met in the train. That is part of our responsibility. So since travel has such a negative connotation, Roman Payne offers another possibility. He says, wandering. Wandering is the act of a child. It is the passion of the genius. It is the discovery of the soul. So my Federation friends and family, let the child and the genius that resides within each of us reflect the flame of our passion and move us towards the discovery of our souls and the realization of our dreams, because the National Federation of the Blind knows that blindness is not the characteristic that defines you or your future. Every day, we raise expectations because low expectations create obstacles between blind people and our dreams. You can live the life you want. Blindness is not what holds you back.